This week on Art on the Air, all the way from New Zealand, we feature Lillian Hetet Owen and Veranoa Hetet, who share their family's traditional weaving arts from the Hetet School of Māori Art, whose classes have gone international on the internet and features a new online exhibit. Our spotlight is on Diversified Visionaries' Red, Yellow, Blue exhibit, opening November 12th at Wild Rose Brewing.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Mary. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Mary and Esther. Art on the air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available on our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our shows are available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for more information about upcoming shows and interviews. I would like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Diversified Art Visionaries, or sometimes just called Dave, talking about the upcoming show they have called Red, Yellow, Blue, and it's all the primary colors. And with us today is Carol Estes, who's involved with the group, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the opening and some of the other things going on with Dave. Carol, welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thanks for inviting me.
Hi, Carol.
Hi.
So tell us a little bit, well, maybe our audience hasn't even heard of Dave, so maybe just give us a quick thumbnail about what Dave is and how it started.
How
and,
it began, yeah.
Yeah, how it began.
Yeah, Dave is actually a regional group. It's a nonprofit of artists in the area of Northwest Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan. And we've been expanding out to the area trying to raise our profile with the community. And right now, one of the places that we're always revolving some art is at the Dyer Sherrillville Library and the Lansing, Illinois Library. So both those places, we always have some contemporary art, and we've been doing some other pop-up shows. And but Dave has been around probably close to 10 years or so with various objectives, and so here we are.
And it used to be called Dyer, you know, and then they changed the name to Diversified some time ago, the Dyer Art Visionaries.
Yeah, it was kind of based out of Dyer, Indiana, but they wanted to look to a broader audience, and we are diversifiedartvisionaries.org. So if you want to find a little bit more about our artist statement and group, you're welcome to check out our website.
And we'll hit that at the end of the show, too. And you also have a Facebook page. So tell us about the upcoming exhibit a little bit with the primary colors.
Right. We have an annual triptych show. This year it will be at Wild Rose Brewing Company in Griffith, Indiana. And it's a triptych show, meaning that we take three words and use them as three categories. And in those categories, we ask our artists to think broadly and create art based on those themes. This year, it's red, yellow, and blue, because those are the three primary colors, and that blossoms into everything else that we see. So it actually opens up a plethora of ideas for the artists to create with. And so that's what we have, a call for art. And The deadline for submission is October 21st. And at Wild Rose, we open up the show on November 12th.
And it'll be
so,
like,
Carol, I just want to clarify. So you don't need to submit a triptych. It's only the words that.
Yes, there are. It's a little convoluted, a little bit. There are three categories that we will have awards for one for each category: red, yellow, and blue, and then a best of concept. And this year, our juror is Dawn Diamantopoulos, and she's an artist in her own right. And she has a BFA from Fine Arts from Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. And she's our juror, and she will go through and select. And the color is in the initial main theme is what people and the artists see using those words and how they complete their vision using those three words.
Excellent. So what do you have coming up beyond this show, which opens in November? What are some of the other things coming up and some of the venues that you're at?
Well, we're at the Lansing, Illinois Library, the Dyer Sherrillville Library, and we're actually just finishing up three exhibits this year at Lassen's Resort in Cedar Lake. And that's been a wonderful venue for us, and it overlooks Cedar Lake. It's a beautiful resort, and we've been fortunate to be able to come in and do three different exhibits in 2022. And so we're anxious to see when they reopen. They'll be closing for the season now, but when they reopen in the spring, we'll be anxious to be back at the at Lassen's Resort.
Yeah, we've interviewed them about the steamboat rides and what they're doing down there and historically. So it's they're really making that and that'd be a great venue and a whole new audience to expose to things. So
it really has been a wonderful a venue for us, and it allows us some open creativity there as well because of the water.
Right. Now tell us about some of your members, where they hail from. You said about how the group wanted to expand, started in Dyer, but now they're more expansive. So tell us some of the members.
Well, we have a good number of members. Our board includes Julie Miller, who does mostly alcohol inks, Tony Lipka, that does a mixed media and heavy things, and he is our head installer. He does amazing work helping us install the shows. Jethro Smith, who is also an artist as well. We have a good number of members that are also connected into with the other art groups locally. So it's wonderful because our members are also cross-connected with other art groups in Northwest Indiana. So I think that it just broadens all of our horizons to do. So,
excellent.
So, Carol, what are you personally working on right now?
Actually, right now, I'm getting ready to pack for, I'm at Highland Handmade, which will pop-up show that was coming up this week. The week after next, I'll be along the Mississippi River, and I'm also have a piece juried into the show at the Midwest Museum of American Art in Elkhart. That's a lovely place, and I'm just really fortunate to have a piece selected for that show.
And you're also president of the Area Artists Association in out of Lebesnik.
As well as the many hats that I wear, yes.
In the last few seconds here, tell us once again the dates of the submission, show, and venue, and how to get a hold of Diversified Arts Visionaries.
Red, yellow, blue. The call for art is connected through Facebook or also on diversifiedartvisionaries.org. The deadline for submission is open to anybody October 21st. The show opens at Wild Rose Brewing Company in Griffith, Indiana on November 12th.
Okay, thank you. That's Carol Estes from Diversified Art Visionaries about their new show, Red, Yellow, Blue. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thanks, Carol.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program. You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM.
We are extremely pleased to welcome Lillian Hetted-Owen and Vera Noah Hetted, two very talented sisters who are part of a creative larger family. They are the directors of the Hetted School of Māori Art in New Zealand. Lillian has co-founded several businesses, and her entrepreneurial spirit opened up the school to the world. Vera Noah has followed in her mother's and ancestors' footsteps to become a decorated weaver, teacher, and artist. She has exhibited, demonstrated, and taught Māori weaving extensively, nationally and internationally. Kia ora, Vera Noah and Lillian. Thank you for joining Larry and I on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It fills me with, you know, such happiness to finally see you in person, because you've been such a part of my, especially my lockdown life, but even before that. So thank you so much.
Kia ora. And thank you for having us.
Well, we love having you. Well, how we always like to start is so our audience can find out a little bit about your background. And I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So, Lillian, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself and everything.
That's big. That's so big.
Especially since I'm 61, Larry. That's a lot of years. Let me try and condense it into what I think it might be important to what we're talking about today. I have grown up, just as Veronal has, in a artistic home. Our parents were artists, and our mum was a weaver and our dad was a carver, and they spent most of our lives pursuing the arts, teaching the arts, practicing the arts. So it's kind of ingrained in our fibre, in our personalities, that creativity is just a natural part of who we are, in whatever form that is. And our mum used to say, you know, every child comes with its own basket of gifts. So whereas Veronal, and she'll talk about herself, I'm sure, is a weaver and an artist, a visual artist, I'm a writer, and music is something that I'm, as a passion. So I've used my ability with words to that skill in terms of building a website is really important. You know, with website, you're looking at the visual images and the written word are the things that drive the power of how people experience something online. And so I've been able to bring those skills that I've developed over the years to what the work that we're doing now online with our teaching. And bringing the skills that Veronal has as a teacher to a wider, broader audience.
Very good. Well, Vera Noah, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, too?
Okay. As Lillian said, we grew up in a very creative home with our parents being artists. But not only were they artists, they were teachers. So we were blessed in that respect. Our parents, mum and dad, were always encouraging us to create anything, create stories, create music, and create visual arts, you know, just make something. And I remember from a very young age that anything I made was celebrated by the both of them. I remember hand painting a T-shirt for my dad, and he wore it to work. I mean, I look back at it now and I cringe, but those are the things that mum and dad would do. They would celebrate anything that we made.
Were they doing it in the house with you, or did they have a separate studio where they did a lot of their work?
They were teaching at, they worked at a lot of different places, but whenever they came home from work, from wherever they were working at that time, they were always creating in the home. I remember, and Lillian would remember this too, that quite often we would be watching TV after dinner and mum would always be working with fibre or preparing fibre for another project. Or my dad would be sitting in his chair and he would have a sketchbook out and he would be drawing a design for a carving. Or he would have a carving in his hand and he would be polishing it with his hands, with the oil from his hands. Lillian tells that story much better than I. So they were always creating or always talking about the next project or filling our home with music and with art, not just Māori art, but other art forms as well. You know, we had some beautiful prints in the home, some lovely paintings. So there was an interest in all forms of visual art and all forms of art, not just Māori art.
Music as well? Was it a musical household?
Well, with Lillian there with the guitar, it was musical. Beautiful voice.
Yeah, we've got a very traditional, you know, we grew up singing our Māori traditional songs. You know, for Māori people, our people didn't have a written language. And so the visual arts are our visual literature. And the oral arts are really important. You know, the music is a really integral part of our culture. And so we grew up singing songs that tell stories of our people, just like many Indigenous people around the world. And we had an instrument called a poi, which is a little ball on a string, and it acts like a little drum. And you learn that as a child, singing, you know, creates the rhythm as you're singing. So those kind of things are interwoven into and part of our experience as children.
And so you're the musician in the family. Other people in your family also join in with that? Was it a kind of a family thing in the music?
Yeah, I mean, any Māori family, any gathering, music is an integral part of that being together.
What about like the grandparents too? Are they an integral part of the family growing up as well?
Yeah. You know, our concept of family, or whānau is our word, is the mum, the dad, the kids, the aunties, the uncles, the cousins, and the grandparents. That's our idea of our concept of family, which is very similar to Asian cultures, to Indigenous cultures, other Indigenous people around the world. It's a much bigger family of people. So your lives are much richer because you have these relationships with all of these different people as part of that. Yeah.
And we were very blessed in that we had our great-grandmother, Rangi Māori, lived to be 103 years old. And we were in our 30s when she passed away. And so we have very clear, vivid memories of her and of her words and of her voice and of her presence.
And her hands.
She was one of New Zealand's most well-known, I suppose. Most well-known Māori weavers. And her daughter, our great aunt, Digaris, was also a celebrated weaver. So we come from generations of weavers. Our great grandmother was taught by her mother, and she was taught by her mother. And so this is something that is not only in our lives right now, but it's in our blood. It's our history, and it's our now.
And it's beautiful that you feel it too, because it's not always guaranteed that having a family of weavers, you're going to feel the calling to it. And so it's very beautiful. I don't know what I would do. I mean, that was my first discipline, and it's the one it kind of informs everything that I do. My beginning, I started weaving or working with a needle, I think probably at 4 years old, and then started weaving and making my own looms as a young teenager. So I've always, I mean, it's been part of my, it's been decades and decades and decades, as Lillian said, you know, like, been a long time.
So tell us about how you have developed this over years, as obviously this is I won't call it a family business, a family arts, but you also have developed it where you bring people in your school, but also exhibit and have it, like, I think I saw in part of it, like you've had things in malls and things. So tell us about the development of the actual getting the art out there. And museums.
Our parents have taught for many years in various kinds of institutions, if you want to put it that way, traditional Māori institutions of what we call marae, which are sort of focal points of a Māori community. So they would go and visit different tribal areas and help to reinstate or restore that traditional knowledge that had been lost through the process of colonisation to those people there in those areas. They've taught in polytechnics, you know, government-funded institutions, and in Te Puia, which is a very traditional Māori arts-focused tourism, actually, operation in Rotorua. So they brought a broad background of teaching and a museum. So our parents also established in the 1980s on the back of Te Māori, which was an exhibition that went to New York first and was really well attended and received by American people. And I always want to acknowledge, because a lot of your listeners will be from the US, that the people, that your people actually at that time in the history of Māori art in contemporary times, not a lot was known about Māori traditional art before that exhibition in New York. But once it went to the Metropolitan and it opened there, your people, as only American people can do, went, wow! And everybody went, oh, wow! You know, and New Zealanders, even Māori people went, wow.
Oh, maybe it is wow.
It made us stop and sit up and think, oh, you know, maybe
wow.
Think, wow. Yeah. You know, after a century and a half worth of colonization, our people have got to the stage where maybe our art wasn't very wow, right? But your people helped us to see it again for what it is, the value and beauty of it. And so that was really a critical moment in contemporary Māori history. And then when it came back to New Zealand, it came back to Wellington first, where our parents were at the museum there, and it came back to accolades and celebration and welcome, not just by Māori people, but New Zealanders throughout the country went to visit this wherever it was shown and around the country. And so I just wanted to take that moment to acknowledge you people, your people, for that.
Mm. Everybody at home where you are then just looked at it with fresh eyes saying, yes, this is special. Yeah.
Oh, well, what was special about it is that our old people went to New York and the various Chicago, our parents went, I think, to Chicago it was when Chicago. And to accompany those exhibits with our songs, with our dances, with our traditions, our incantations, all those kind of things that make our art what it is. And I think was very much part of the whole experience. So when it returned back to Wellington, our parents were based at the museum, and they had some trainees. They had started the first museum Māori training program for a training program for Māori workers in museums. There were up to that point no Māori people working in museums. And now, of course, we have our National Museum. A lot of the people that they trained then are now in key positions in the National Museum in New Zealand. And so a lot of these things led to significant developments. Sorry, I've got way off the track. Bring me back.
Well, no. So did it. So when this is happening, at what point are you in your teaching, or especially you, Verna, in your teaching?
That's a really good question, because I actually was in England living there for 6 years. Verna was here with Mum and Dad and our sister and brother working alongside them. So I'll hand it over to V now to talk about
Right. It would be so. Did you get a lot of contact from everybody, you know, let's say New Zealand and Australia to learn more? Was the school, at what point was your teaching career?
Well, just to clarify for you, so our parents were teaching, and Veronal and Sam, Veronal's husband, became the baton was passed to them at a point where they then became the teachers.
Right.
But Veronal, you might want to pick up from the 80s where you were.
Well, further to Lillian speaking about the museum internship program for Māori people, I was one of the interns on my parents' training program. I didn't really enjoy it. I loved being with Mum and Dad every day, but I didn't enjoy being with work that had already been created. I wanted to create it. And so I left that, and at the same time that Mum was teaching that museum internship program, she was also teaching at the marae here at our in our community. She was teaching women to weave, and so I went in with her into that, and not only did she teach me to weave, I mean, she had been teaching me since I was 14 years old or even younger, but she also started teaching me to teach, because it's one thing knowing this craft or art, it's another thing knowing how to impart the knowledge to make it easier for the student to not only learn but to retain the knowledge. So my mum and dad taught me to be a teacher of Māori art. And at the same time as being a teacher, of course, I was creating at the same time. But what I found was I was giving so much of my creative energy to my students. So I would have 10 students and they would come in every day, you know, for 8 hours or so a day. I was spending so much time, so much of my own creative energy giving to them, that I was not creating enough for myself. It was, I think, about 7 years ago, Lillian.
8 years for me now.
8 years, wow.
Yeah.
Lillian asked me how many students I could fit in my studio, how many people I could teach comfortably in my studio. And I said, well, comfortably 6 to 8, at a push 10. And she said to me, how would you feel about teaching hundreds of people when you sleep? That's great.
So brilliant.
Yeah, so that's when Lillian took over, really started planning the Hetit School of Māori Art for real.
So Lillian, were you still in England at the time of this conversation?
No, I'd come back. I'd been back for about, well, I can't remember, probably about 15 or maybe even 20 years. Virunor was actually teaching through the early 90s with our mum, she started, and Sam, her husband. But by the time we got to, I don't know, 2014, I was actually in between contracts. I was in between writing contracts and I was waiting for my contract to come through and it wasn't coming through. I thought, I've got to go and do something. So I went online and I discovered the online world. I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is another thing we've got you people to, your America people to thank for too, because it's really made it possible for us to connect, you know, across the globe. I mean, what would we have done in COVID had we not had the online world? Probably gone crazy. So, you know, I looked at that. I spent some time looking into how to build a website. I built a WordPress site to begin with. Once Virunor said, yeah, you know, I said, let's put you online and you can teach online while you sleep to a gazillion people. Well, that's what we did. We started with one lesson, the first lesson that Virunor teaches. And I thought to myself, if we put it online and someone buys it, we just need one person to buy it. And I think that it's a go. Well, I put it online. Virunor put a little note on her Facebook page. And within a week, we had our first student. I remember standing in Virunor's kitchen when we got our first student. I said, Virunor, one day we will have 200 students. I couldn't believe it as I was saying it out of my mouth. 200, I thought, 200? Going from 8 to 200? But actually, it turned into thousands. Virunor has taught thousands of people online. We have a student in England, Rebecca Small, whose pā harakeke, she used to get the flax, in a little fenced-off garden that they have in the cities there, opposite Lord's Cricket Ground. She started with that first lesson, and now she weaves the most beautiful kete baskets.
And she exhibits throughout the UK.
And she sells her work, because we also teach people how to sell work. So it's been an amazing ride. And that's, the last 7 years it's been.
And don't you think the online classes are just so brilliant, because you can revisit them over and over to really understand the technique up close and to practice at your own pace? It's just really I mean, everything has a balance, and that certainly this whole online world is kind of the balance for the devastation of the pandemic. one of the balances.
I think that, you know, when Virenor started teaching online, she got a lot of flack from our own people, actually, because, oh, you shouldn't be teaching our traditional arts online, you know. I thought, why not? But anyway, there were some barriers that had to be broken down there. COVID actually helped wipe them all out because people had to go online. But interestingly, we've found that students learn, compared with the students who have been taught in person, students who learn online with us become much better weavers, more confident and capable in a far quicker time. And partly because, as you say, Esther, they can rewind, go back and rewind and rewind and rewatch. You can't do that in any classroom with any teacher. Ask a teacher 1,000 times to show you 1,000 times and they'll be pulling their hair out.
But yes.
You can do that. And the other thing, of course, is that, so from that point of view, it's very much aligned with the traditional way of teaching. It's just you and your teacher going at your pace when you're ready to come to that lesson. Not every Wednesday and, oh, next Wednesday I've got a cold or something else has happened, I can't turn up for class. You can turn up when it suits you. But also you don't have the pressure of learning in a group. When you learn in a group, a lot of people can be themselves, so they feel embarrassed if they're too slow, or they feel frustrated if everyone else is too slow, you know. So it's online learning is actually pretty cool.
It is indeed.
You're listening to Art on the Air with our guests Virenor Hettet and Lillian Hettet Owen on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
And so how, and this is like when I was looking at the classes, do you give resources to find the flex? Because not everybody can go and harvest it, which I've enjoyed watching you do that, actually. I enjoy watching the whole process, which I want you to talk about in a minute. But so are materials available? I know I would probably just use whatever I had, you know, paper or cardboard or, you know, I would make do somehow to learn. But are the materials available?
I watch a lot of Netflix, especially over the past week with this flu. I've watched a lot of Netflix, and it's amazing how many shows I have watched that are filmed in the US. And I pause and I scream out, these flags, New Zealand flags, is growing everywhere. It grows in Hawaii. It grows in Scotland. I've been to Scotland to weave with the flags there. It grows in the Netherlands, and it grows on St. Helena Island, which is in the middle of nowhere. It's not in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of the South Atlantic Ocean. So flax is a hardy plant, and it grows everywhere. But you're right. You can weave simple baskets with a range of materials. So during COVID, when so many people from around the world signed up onto the course, they were weaving with a cut-up calendar. who needed the calendar?
That would be me.
You know, they were cutting up cereal boxes or using a stiff ribbon to weave with. And it was incredible what people were weaving this simple basket out of. It was wonderful, wasn't it, Lillian?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we're not prescriptive about what people use. For our own people, it's wonderful to use our traditional materials. But, you know, our ancestors came to New Zealand, Aotearoa, New Zealand, from tropical islands to a cool climate and very quickly had to adapt. So we have a tradition of resourcefulness. And I think most artists, the creativity comes from that need to be resourceful and invent and, you know, push yourself past the boundary of what you know. And that, to me, is the exciting thing, to see students come in and be weaving things that we haven't woven with. We don't have bent gear here or the whatever plant they have where they are, and to see what comes out of that.
The question I have is, of course, with the European colonization, probably was, like there was in the United States, sort of rejection of the indigenous arts. And over the history, but has that been embraced by the whole population of your arts, you know, the general European descendants of people? Is that kind of happening? It sounds like it is because of COVID.
Well, actually, we have a treaty. So, you know, the Treaty of Waitangi, the Treaty of Waitangi, and that kind of is a bit like your constitution, right? And so it does have some legal government kind of standing. And but apart from that, we also have had a lot of intermarriage. In one of our very famous Māori women from the 70s, Dame Whenua Cooper, once famously said, if you can't beat them, marry them. And that has what actually happened in our tradition. You know, we've got, Viren and I are fruit salads. We're, you know, our grandmother on our mum's side was from England. We've got French. Hete is actually a French name. I think it's pronounced Epe. And so, you know, we have a mixed heritage. But in answer to your question, Mary, New Zealand is by and large accepting of the fact that we are a bicultural nation. We have aspirations to be a multicultural nation, but in my view, we need to get the bicultural part first, right first,
right.
Let alone the multicultural part first. And so biculturally, Māori people are bicultural, many Māori people, not all Māori people. Some Māori people through colonisation have lost the connection with their Māori side. But those who have retained that, have had the privilege of retaining it, have also been forced to become culturally not, you know, European, New Zealand culture. I'm blabbing on here. You're going to
No, no, that's very, that's what we want
to
hear.
Nub of it. That, you know, on our airplane, we have a Māori design. So I could look at it from an economic business point of view, and our Māori-ness is a very big part of New Zealand's brand. The all-black rugby team do the haka, and everybody knows that that is from New Zealand. So from an economic point of view, our business people here in New Zealand, whether you're Māori or not Māori, know the value of our language and our design, our art, as giving brand differentiation and value. So that's one, I could answer it that way. I could answer it that a lot of Māori and non-Māori people in New Zealand, Kiwis, are just generally proud of the haka and the All Blacks, right? And they'll get up, whether they're non-Māori or Māori, overseas. When I lived overseas, you know, I could see you're united by the things that you have in common. When you get back home, they may not say hi to you on the street, but over there, we're all Kiwis, and we all do the haka, and we all say kia ora overseas. It might be different when we get home, but that's what makes us different in the world. If you say to a New Zealander, name the things about New Zealand that are Kiwi, you know, they might say hokey pokey ice cream, pineapple lumps. Eventually, you're going to get to the haka, the kuru, our design motif, Māori motif, and the hongi, you know, piercing noses. There are going to be things that are Māori that make us stand out, make us who we are.
What a great cultural marriage that is. It's too bad that doesn't happen. You know, even in the United States, embracing some of our Native Americans here has been difficult at best, and our history has not been very good about doing that. So it's kind of sounds like New Zealand got it right.
Well, we're getting there.
Getting there.
Let's put it that way, Larry. I mean, we could have a big, long conversation, which we won't right now. Maybe one day you Esther and Viren and I will get together over a cup of coffee with it. But, you know, there's lots of things to be spoken about in terms of cultural appropriation in art.
Right.
And so how do you feel about that, though? I mean, misappropriation is very different from appropriation. So,
yeah.
What are you referencing as misappropriation?
There was a couple of years back, someone in, there's lots and lots of examples, but I remember seeing the baby blanket. Remember the baby blanket thing?
Yes, I remember the baby blanket.
you talk about the baby blanket for a moment because I'm hogging the floor.
No, you talk about the baby blankets, please, because, you know, you can touch on the misappropriation thing.
So this company overseas had decided, wouldn't it be a great idea to put Māori design on baby blankets? So they just took our designs ad hoc, you know, thought, oh, that's a nice design, and just stuck it on a baby blanket, whether it was appropriate or not. One thing, the design, you know, our designs, as I said earlier, because it's our visual literature, they all have meaning. Some meanings are appropriate for, some designs are appropriate for baby blankets and some aren't. But aside from that, the commercialization of an appropriate creative design that's not your culture is misappropriation.
Right. Right. And the value, artists are historically devalued for what they do anyway. You know, it's, I don't know how many times somebody's walked by my friend's booth and said, oh, I can do that. Or, oh my gosh, $50 is too much for that. And you go, okay, she had to buy the kiln. She had to buy the glazes. She had to learn how to manipulate the clay. And I mean, like, that's incredible. She's getting maybe 5 cents an hour for making this beautiful item. So yes, it's a like a double hurt when something that is created is then taken and used for commercial gain inappropriately.
Like in photography, a lot of times you think, this is for, you know, you can gain experience and exposure for the work that you'll do for us. Yeah, okay. I have about $10,000 in the camera equipment. So, right, sure, that's a good exposure. You're involved in public sculpture, Lillian. Is that something about that? So tell us a little bit about that. I think you had a trust set up, public sculpture trust. So tell us about that experience.
Oh, okay. That's a blast from the past. There was a friend of mine invited me to join I became part of a founding group of people, 7 of us, in the Hutt Valley. Awakairangi is the Māori word for the Hutt Valley. I don't know, if I say Hutt Valley to you, I imagine you imagine a landscape with all these little huts on it. Right? It's not like that. It's a city. It just happens to be called Hutt. Love a hut. Anyway, so Wellington City had a sculptural trust, and Wellington has some amazing sculptures around the inner city, around the bay of the city. And so the Hutt Valley decided they wanted to have a trust, and so I became one of the founding members. And we did things like, there was I can't remember his name, and I'm sorry about that, someone who made beautiful windmill sculptures. Huge they were. So we got 3 of these. They were really colourful, and we put them in one of the main children's parks. We've put them on, you know, roundabouts. I don't know if you have roundabouts in the States. We have these roundabouts at intersections. And in the middle of them, we put some artwork, you know, so people are sitting in their car waiting to get their turn, and they can look at art while they're waiting. So major junctions and places around the city, we'd place quite significant pieces of art by you know, fairly decent, fairly well-known artists. Mm. I always say, you know, the best artists nobody knows about. They live in the back of beyond. We just don't know about them.
It's so true. So when you're, I read about your matrix, your weaving matrix. You want people to really start at the beginning weaving. Is that correct?
I want to teach people the same way I was taught. That's it. So I'm teaching in the same the same system or on the same, I'm losing my words, I'm sorry.
Sequence.
I'm teaching in the same sequence that my mother taught me. And I guess, and looking back now, I think I may have been the guinea pig. I may have been the one to trial out the sequence. So mum, as a teacher, could see if it was working. if the sequence was right. And she got it right because our mother has been gone for 16 years now. And I was still learning under her when she passed away. But because of the way she had taught me, because of the sequence, because of the matrix, I am able to now, even without her, create anything I want to create. So any thought or any image I have in my mind, I can bring that out through my hands because of the way she taught me and because of the techniques that she gave me.
So it's kind of like your classical training has allowed you to then put a contemporary, your own contemporary voice into your pieces. Mm-hmm. And so everything is possible when you have the basic instruction.
Yes.
And the perfection of that, you know, because you have to develop a perfection. I mean, weaving is, you know, on one level, it's very simplistic, but on the next level, to get everything lining up properly and so that it all works, I mean, there needs to be practice and classical training. So
you're listening to Art on the Air with our guests, Vera Noah Hettet and Lillian Hettet Owen, on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. This is Pledge Week for your public radio station, and Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge, so we may continue to bring you this great program.
So how do you, I'm looking for your inspiration, I guess, when you want to take a leap from something classical to maybe mixing the classical with a contemporary spin. What is your source of inspiration?
Well, before I can create anything, I have to have the story in my head. Mm. It's like illustrating a book. You need the words before you can draw the pictures to go with those words. So I need the words in my head before I can create the piece. I need the whakaaro, I need the thought, the idea. And the inspiration for anything I weave comes from the simplest of things to the biggest of ideas. It could be thinking about one of my grandchildren. And so I would create a basket that represents a baby growing inside a tummy or something.
What about when you're creating, let's say for those mokopuna that let's say you're doing, would it be the korowai for the new, is that like a traditional 1 year? Is it traditional for a 1 year present or is that just a tradition within your family?
Well, it was going to be a tradition within my family, but then my five children started having children quicker than I could weave. So I'm actually five grandchildren behind at the moment. So we've got a lot of cousins. We live on the marae, which is in the community. It's like a pueblo, I suppose you could say. And we have a lot of cousins, and a lot of the cousins that my age were having grandchildren. They were up to grandchild number 3, 4, or 5, and I had none at that time. And so I remember watching a Kevin Costner movie, Field of Dreams, and he built this baseball diamond and he kept saying, build it, they will come. And so I had that same thought, weave it, they will come.
Oh.
And I started weaving
beautiful prayers. It's like a big prayer to weave.
Yeah, I started weaving this korowai, which is a traditional cloak. And I kept thinking, weave it, they will come, weave it, they will come. And I was weaving this cloak for about 2 or 3 years, and suddenly one of my children informed us that he was going to have a baby. And I completed this korowai before my first grandbaby's first birthday and gifted it to her because it was for her I was dreaming. I was weaving this cloak with her as my dream. And her little sister was born a couple of years later, and I thought, oh, gee, I'd better make her one. We don't want the big sister saying, well, I'm Nanny's favourite because she made me a cloak and she didn't make you one. So I made your little sister one for her first birthday. But then the babies just came really quickly, and I'm five behind.
What is the time frame in weaving one generally? I know it depends on your time, but.
Well, I weave full time, and so that's every single day, including weekends. I don't often have a holiday or a break. And I'm quite a fast weaver. And I say that without arrogance. It's just the way it is. So to prepare the materials from the raw flax right through to the completion, the tying off of the corduroy, it should take me a comfortable 4 months to weave one.
It would take most weavers a year to do what Furinor does in 4 months.
Wow.
You know, I was looking at the website, and I see all the courses. So maybe describe some of the courses. You know, I realize it's much of a visual thing, but as much as you can for our audience. And also, there's a shop on there. So maybe tell us a little bit about that, Lillian.
So our courses are divided into the three different techniques. There are three main weaving techniques that we are teaching online at the moment. There are some that we're not covering. Raranga, which is our Māori basketry technique. Kaniko, which is a loom-free finger weaving technique. It's our oldest weaving technique. It's akin to twining, and we do have a number of Native American weavers who have joined our courses because they're wanting to reconnect and relearn some of the traditions they've lost, and they're doing that through weaving with us. And also we have Whatu Kākahu. Whatu Kākahu is the weaving of the traditional cloaks that Verena was just talking about. So people can join one of those courses and work their way through the sequence of lessons that we call the matrix.
And these are worldwide, so anybody can get these as long as they have access to the internet.
Yep, they can. The Weave Korowai program, which is cloak weaving, you have to apply for that one, but we do have a number of someone in Hawaii who's doing that with us, a Hawaiian who's living in America, in the mainland America, is doing that with us, and a couple of Native American and a Canadian First Nations weavers doing that with us.
And do you also sell products? I mean, and I don't know, do you ship them from New Zealand, or do you have a way to do it, like if someone in the States wants, or do you have an outlet over here to do that? Have you worked that out yet, merchandising?
Well, we have two videos that people can view, their films. We've actually made three films. We have three films, one about our mum, one about our dad and his life as a carver, and one about a canoe, the carving of a canoe. Three canoes that our dad and his team of carvers made. So they're a little insight into our family. People can just sign up and watch those online. And we have a book that we had printed, republished our mum's book, Māori Weaving with Erinora Pukatapuhita. So those are available. I'm actually just finishing our website, hetitart.com. So our lessons are on hetitschoolofmaoriart.com, and our new website will be where we will be showing work, exhibition work, and that's hetitart.com, and that's where you'll be able to purchase the book and watch the videos from that site. And that's where we're launching on the 30th of September, Verinor's exhibition. So your listeners are welcome to come and check out hetitart.com and see Verinor's online exhibition that Creative New Zealand have supported Verinor over the last year to produce a whole body of work. And maybe Verinor would like to talk quickly about that.
I think we only have a few minutes. But
that's okay.
I'm nervously excited about the launch of the exhibition. As any artist knows, that when you are sharing your work to a lot of people, to the public, you are bearing your soul. And these are very personal stories that I have, that I am telling in my weaving. And so I am going to be bearing my soul. So that will be it.
It's going to be so beautiful. I look forward to it.
And the exhibit will be just up in perpetuity, so to speak, on online. Excellent. Well, we're almost ready to wrap it up, but we want to give you one more chance to tell us about how people can find you online, everything else. So whoever wants to take that, please do so.
Okay, so you can join a class or a course with Verinal, Learning with Verinal, at hetetschoolofmaoriart.com. And you can check out Verinal's exhibition at hetetart.com. That's hetetart.com.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air. It's been a wonderful long interview that we got so much information from, all the way from New Zealand. Veronova Hettet and Lillian Hettet Owen, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air and sharing about Maori art and everything.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Thank you for having us. Kia ora.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. We would like to thank our current supporters and underwriters, which include regional art patron Mary Levan and Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art on the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good, and you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.